And welcome, everyone.
How you doing?
Pretty good. I'm Jose Rodriguez, the host of Region Nerd Alert, right here on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, streaming worldwide on the internet, lakeshorepublicradio.org. And you can find this podcast and every other podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast.
And the NPR One app.
But this is a very special episode. We have some very special guests, and we have one person from the regular crew, so we're going to do some quick introductions. So to my left we have...
I am Skyler, the regular here. You can find me at Twitter at Officially Ova.
All right, and then he actually does the opening to our show. So
I do, and thank you for letting me do that for you.
Thank you for bestowing upon such noble tones to my ears. And so our first guest, to his left, we have Jenny Bean, who is a part of the Hammond Public Library. And as far as I know, it's 4-year anniversary coming up?
4 years, yes.
Awesome. And you actually have something very special to promote, and we will get to that. Well, if you heard the intro, you know what it's about. But
spoiler.
We're going to keep it a surprise. But to her left in the digital realm, on the phone waves, the phonic area of the darkness, we have a very special guest, someone who I am extremely excited to meet again. I believe I met him close to a year ago, and we exchanged contact information. But before that, I think I met him in like first grade when he signed my copy of Haunted Indiana 2, and I've had it with me.
I feel really old right now.
Oh, sorry about that. But I will say, like, you are one of my top authors, and I am fangirling right now. But without further ado, Mr. Mark Merriman, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. Honored to be here tonight, and thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for making time for us, and such a perfect time, too, because it's the spooky season. It's Region Nerd Alert's October Fest thing. No beer involved, but Halloween special. And yeah, I've been a huge fan of yours for a very long time now. And
I'm honestly very honored by that. Thank you.
Oh, well, no problem. Thank you. And just really quick, before we started talking, you said that, now I don't want to, you know, step on any toes, but you said that there is another book in the making?
Yeah, that is something that has just come about in the last few weeks, actually. About 6 years ago, I took a hiatus from writing ghost stories for a number of reasons, and just recently have been able to make contact and with a new publisher. And it appears like in about a year or so, we're going to be doing it'll be 20 years from the time that I wrote Haunted Indiana 1.
Wow.
And this will be a sort of a compilation with a lot of new material, a new book on Indiana ghost stories. So excited about that.
Awesome. So it is going to be about Indiana again with new stories to tell?
Yeah. You bet.
That's awesome. And is there like a title yet? Will it be like, I believe it's the fifth installment if it's going to be?
Depending on how you, it'll be the eighth book out. But there have been four straight up Haunted Indiana. So I don't know that's going to have that title with a new publisher. I don't know if that's going to be sort of in that realm. But, title is waiting to come. So, first of all, I got to do actually to the writing, which is the fun part.
That's awesome. And I got to say, like, I've been reading, your second book, which is the one you signed for me, like, all week. And I got to say, reading it now compared to when I was, like, in elementary school, not to make anyone feel old, but reading it now, I much more appreciate like the writing value of it. Like there's so many like, oh, no problem. Like there's so many, like there's a style of like entertainment, but with just as much information. And then there's like the journalistic approach you take to it. And it's just makes it an all around enjoyable read. And
well, thank you. I have no self delusions about being a great writer. What I tell people is, I'm not a writer. I'm not even a storyteller. I'm really a story retailer.
Story.
Which is kind of just taking some of this great old material and trying to breathe life into it and then sort of retelling it. So it's a lot of fun. And that's really what it's meant to be. It's just meant to be an awful lot of fun.
I got to say, like, that is one thing I take from your books It gives me spine chills, but also it is just a lot of – it's a very fun read. I'm going to open it up to everyone. How are you guys bringing in the Halloween season right now? Jenny, we can start with you if you like.
I hung a door sign on my house, and that's pretty much as far as I went. I also have a mask.
I see that. Yeah,
nice spooky mask.
Yeah, I got a ghost mask for the season, too.
Awesome. It's great you're bringing in the season and also the flu season as well.
Yeah.
And having fun with that, so we're all appreciative of that. How about you, Skylar?
There is one decoration outside of my house and realistic cobwebs everywhere. So I've been preparing for this all year.
October is not the time to clean because it makes it all spooky. But how about you, Mark? Do you have the one decoration theme that we're seeing?
No, right now? Actually, I geek out on Halloween. I really,
awesome.
Really do. My office has a number of serious things. I actually just came back from vacation to find that my building manager, where in my regular job, had completely decked out my office.
Oh, that's awesome.
Halloween stuff, and here at home, and yeah, it's I kind of get geeked out by that. And after we are done here, I have a date with my wife to sit down and watch one of our Halloween movies. So I love it.
That's amazing. So if you don't mind me asking, what Halloween movie are you going to watch?
Probably Disney came out with something called Tower of Terror, which was actually based off of the ride, and it's a fun, somewhat innocent ghost story. I watch some of the more scary stuff too, but that one's a really more of an innocent one and a lot of fun to watch.
That's awesome. I know we talk about streaming a lot here as well. Disney Plus has like this Halloween section, and I think Hulu, and I haven't seen it on Netflix yet, but it has its own special section, and I know they have like the Treehouse of Horror from The Simpsons, and they have like specific episodes from all the Disney shows. So that's pretty exciting. I don't know. What about you guys? Do you have what's your favorite go-to Halloween movie, I should say? That's a toughie to just spring on you.
The go-to, if there's one I gotta watch, it's gotta be The Thing. It's one of my favorite horror films, and it holds up so well to this day.
You know, smack me on the wrist. I don't think that's the one I've not seen yet.
Mm. My go-to is Nightmare on Elm Street. I love Freddy Krueger.
Oh, Freddy.
Yeah.
Freddy's a favorite here as well. So what's your favorite?
Wow.
Freddy Krueger movie.
The original.
The first
one?
Yeah,
with Johnny Depp,
It deteriorates quickly after the original.
Oh, yeah, we talk about it on here. I can never get the name right, so I just call it the Freddy Krueger movie because I say, oh, yeah, the Nightmare
Before Elm Street.
Before Elm Street. And
close enough.
So, can we just take note of this for a second, that we have a librarian going for Freddy Krueger and the guy who writes ghost stories is going for Disney? Is there something a little bit off in all of this?
Hey, I love the bats and the pumpkins side of Halloween. Yeah. Like, I know my co-host here loves like the bloody slasher side, which I can get a part of as well. I think we just recently seen Hellraiser together. I don't know if you've guys seen that, but that one's pretty graphic.
Yeah, it's a tough watch.
One of my great, just a classic ghost story, outright frightening ghost story, is one that a lot of people haven't heard of. It was George C. Scott from the early 70s. It's called The Changeling. And there's since been another movie by the same name, but it was a different plot with Clint Eastwood. But this is a George C. Scott. And what I love about it is a flat-out, honest, straight-up ghost story that is genuinely scary. So on the scary side, I love that.
Hmm. Yeah, speaking of like older movies as well, this is a perfect plug. I thought I seen it on here, but it's not. Lakeshore PBS actually has Lakeshore Classic Movies. And like if you have cable, I think it's like Channel 56, or it's also on the Fire Stick. If you make Lakeshore your like main station, but they have a lot of classics on there. There's the original Little Shop of Horrors with Jack Nicholson. They have The Wasp Woman, Last Man on the Tingler, Vincent Price film. Like, it's and Night of the Living Dead too. Oh man, I need to really look at this because I'm just looking at this now. But yeah, go to Lakeshore Public Media, and you can find links on how to connect your account and everything. And yeah, my boss actually told me about it, and I was like, well, I'm mad that you took 3 years working here to tell me that you had a Halloween section of Lakeshore PBS. But so Mark, just so going back to the books real quick.
Yeah.
Jenny, did you have any questions that you wanted to ask Mark before? I'm sorry, I'm sort of fangirling over here.
Well, I love your books, Mark, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I read them probably middle school, so yeah. But I just love reading about horrors around Indiana and traveling around seeing these places. I recently picked back up, I think it was in Haunted Indiana 2, about this little girl. This couple bought a house in Schererville, this little girl
was, I love that story.
Like, haunting their house. And I love that they incorporated the little girl into their family.
Yeah.
And I kind of want that rocking horse right now in my house.
You know, that one actually holds a real special place for me. I mean, it's weird when you say, I was thinking about this tonight, that some of the ghost stories are actually heartwarming, and there are a few that actually are. And after the publication of one, Haunted Indiana 1, I had somebody come to me and say, you know, I got this aunt, she's in a nursing home, but she's really sharp, she has a great, great ghost story. And this lady came two or three times and said, you got to talk to my aunt. So eventually I made the contact and went over, and here was this lady who was probably in her early 80s, but just sharp as a tack. And she was, I mean, very, just incredibly intelligent, and just unfolded that whole story of buying a house and a little girl's ghost in it. And, you know, as I conclude that story, it's true, is when she was done telling me the story, I looked over, and this lady who was so composed was crying. And I said, ma'am, why are you crying? And she said, well, we moved out of that house 35 years ago, and I always felt like I've abandoned one of my children.
Aww,
it was really neat. Yeah, they absolutely, I spoke to the son of that lady not that long ago, and he remembers all of that very vividly. So yeah, that was a neat, that I'm glad you picked up on that one, because that's a very special story to me.
Oh man, I would love to have like a ghost, like little sister or a little brother. Like, being an only child, I would
to each their own, man.
You know what? You wouldn't want that.
I think I'd have to pass on that. I don't know.
Speaking of that, Mark, I love the quote. Like, you have, it says in the back of the book, but also I think the foreword, how if you never seen a ghost, but the moment you do, it'll be exactly 1 second before I vacate the premises at rate approximating the speed of light. And I thought,
absolutely.
I feel the same way. Like, I would love to see a ghost, but at the same time, reflexes would kick in, and I'd be out. There'd be a Jose-shaped hole in the wall when me just vacating the premises.
Well, it's kind of funny because I've been to probably, I don't have count, but probably 100 haunted places. And my wife and I call ourselves Spook Be Gone, because no matter what they tell us is going on before we get there, as soon as we arrive, Casper's out the back door, because we have never seen or heard anything. You know, I've heard some interesting bumps and thumps one night I spent, but never really seen anything. And that's okay. That probably is okay, because I'm honestly curious what I would do, but I think probably that's pretty accurate. I'd get out of there pretty quick.
Yeah, like I don't think I've ever, at least consciously, never experienced like anything supernatural. There was one time where I thought it was a dream for the longest time, but I was playing with my cousins, and a little Barbie doll just walked for like 2 seconds and then it fell. And I thought I dreamt that for the longest time. I'm with my other two cousins, and they start reciting to me my dream. And I'm like, wait, that was real? And they're like, yeah, you were there. And I got so many goosebumps, because that was like one of my most realistic dreams.
Tried repressing that one pretty hard.
I guess so. Yeah. And I had no idea. But how about you, Scott? You're telling me a pretty spooky...
Yeah, so, like, I've never actually, like, seen a specter or, like, anything, like, visually appearing in front of me, but I had this friend who lived in Roselawn, and there were so many tales of, oh, my friend came over and house sat, and he ended up seeing this insane ghost, and all the cabinets flew open in the house, and, like, he was terrified, he had to leave, and there was some weird... things. I had slept over there and felt like I was getting choked out in my sleep one time.
Oh,
that was kind of weird.
That's angry.
It was super angry. And so we're like, oh, we're real bored. There's like six of us. Let's like have a little hold hands around the kitchen table, turn the lights off, and just ask questions, see what happens. So we do that, and I had a pretty full glass of water sitting on the table. We're all holding hands. We get done asking the questions. We turn the lights back on. And the water is spilled all over the table, and the glass is turned sideways.
Oh, geez.
And there's this fruit basket behind my one friend, almost hitting the ceiling, penduluming back and forth.
Oh, like, oh.
It was, I was like, we're done with this. All right, turn the lights on, keep them on, and I'm probably leaving very soon.
Yeah.
A Skylar-shaped hole through your friend's door.
Yep.
What about you, Jenny?
Well, I'm originally from southern Indiana, close to Louisville, Kentucky. And shout out to my cousin Whitney, who loves to go on little ghost tours with me. And we've been to Waverly Hills in Louisville. It's a old TB sanitarium. And they actually offer tours. So we decided to do the little haunted tour, which is like 2 hours. And you're in a big group with a guide. So we're going through, and they tell us this little story about Timmy, the little boy who loves to play ball. We don't think anything of it. And on our way out, I noticed something in the hallway, because you had to go down the stairwells and you see each hallway. And I'm like, oh, no, I didn't see anything. I look back and I see this little orb just floating away. Mm. So I was like, Whitney, we have to do the 4-hour one where they allow you to go on the levels by yourself. There is a tour guide, but you get like a smaller group. So we went.
4 hours.
The plot
four
thickens.
Hours. Yeah. And, like, the guide was like, okay, so we're going to stand in this hallway, but we're going to turn off all our lights because we had cameras and equipment with us. So we turn off the lights, and we're standing there, and we hear this boom and scuttering across the hallway, and we scream bloody murder. And we walk out. And
what hour was that in?
I think it was, like, 10 or 11 p.m.
Oh.
And so we calm down. We're like, oh, we're okay. We're okay. And we go back out, try to figure out what actually slammed. And there's this door to, like, the morgue area that is pretty heavy but can be moved and made that same sound when we moved it. We're like, oh, man, we have to come back.
We got to do the six-hour tour.
Yeah. And that's what we did.
That's how they get you. They give the haunt right at the end of the 4 hour. You know, there's a 6 hour.
Yeah.
Want to spend the whole day here.
So we do the 6 hour, and we're sitting in the nursing area. That's where their apartments were. And we turn off all the lights, and I have a voice recorder going. Because at this point, we're like, oh, we're ghost hunters. We have to get equipment. And so we're sitting there, and we feel this shush come across us, and I felt someone grab me. And we turn on the lights, and I'm like, hey, Whitney, did you, like, grab me? Because there's, like, nails, like, fingerprints in my leg. And she's like, no, I didn't touch you. And I'm like, oh, we got to go.
All right, it made physical contact.
Yeah.
Draw the line.
So we didn't venture out to Elizabethtown, Kentucky. They have a Mason Lodge. And we're like, okay, they're doing a tour. Let's go. 4 hours. We can do this. So we're in the little like Mason Lodge meeting room area, and they have a balcony where they have little toys. So we're sitting there just talking, and we hear something, but then we hear two other groups coming up the stairs. Like, oh, okay, there's them. So I listen to the recorder, and I hear, they are coming. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, when I heard that recording, I threw my headphones off and just like, not listen to anymore.
Isn't that Poltergeist? They're coming?
Yeah. Oh. So supposedly they have this little girl that plays with their dolls up there. And I'm like, we're not doing this ever again,
oh,
please.
Man. You'll have to let me know, like, if they're still doing tours and stuff. That sounds real fun. It sounds
road
fun.
Trip. Yeah, that's not fun.
Man, that's awesome. So, Mark. So, favorite ghost hunt, if you can pick one out of all of your books, the School Spirits and the Haunted Indiana books, do you have something that's like very near and dear or something that has...
In terms of the places I've been?
And yeah, in terms of the places you've been, what's your favorite one?
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of outright spooky, it's a place that actually has been pretty much torn down. But it would be Central State Hospital in the middle of Indianapolis, which was an abandoned night. Began in the 19th century. Yeah, I'm not even going to say mental institution. I'm going to say insane asylum because that's exactly what it was. And by the time I heard the stories, began talking to people, it had been abandoned probably in the 70s. But it was taken over. It was still largely unused, but the state police owned part of it, and the Indiana Department of Health owned part of it. And I had heard just some crazy, crazy stories from police contacts. And that day when I arrived down in town, I had met and had lunch with two Capitol State policemen. And the Capitol Police are the branch of the state police that guards facilities. And I'm sitting across from lunch from this young man who is, you know, short-cut hair, burly. He had muscles in places that he didn't have the places. And this young man looked across the table at me and said, "Sir, to be very clear, I will be written up for disobeying a direct order before I ever go into that place alone again."
Whoa.
So that kind of set me, you know, on the edge a little bit. I went to the place and kind of driving around, somewhat sheepishly looking for someone to talk to, and I came across a groundskeeper. And I stopped, and I kind of just said, you know, I'm interested in researching some of the history. I want to know some of the things that happened here and any of the stories they tell. And I swear to you, he stopped me. This sounds like something out of a movie, but he absolutely said it. He stopped me and said, "I know what you're looking for, and I hear them." Said, "Okay, who do you hear?" He said, "I hear the patients. They still scream at night."
Oh, my goodness.
And he proceeded to give me this tour of the facility, and it looked like something out of a Hollywood set. I mean, it was exactly what you would think, up to and including manacles on the walls and the whole, I mean, it looked like a horror movie set.
Oh, my
and,
goodness.
And the guys, we concluded this daylight tour of it. He said, "Now, tomorrow night, I'm going to be here by myself. And if you want to come back, we'll do this again by flashlight." And I looked at him and said, "Thank you. By tomorrow night, I'm going to be home with my wife and child." Okay? No way. I am chasing Casper through this place.
Oh,
and
man.
But it was such a spooky place that had some great, great stories. Of all my stories, that's probably the most classic horror story in there. And it was the reality lived up every bit of the premise of that story.
Oh, wow.
Right, it's almost like cliche, like you said, right out of a movie.
You
meet the groundskeeper. The groundskeeper scares you.
Yes, exactly. I tell that story, and it sounds very much like, okay, yeah, you're making that up. But even at the time, I thought, oh, come on. Is Boris Karloff going to come winking my way? You know, is this set up somehow? But no, it was legit. And a genuinely, genuinely creepy place.
I'll say, if scary movies taught us anything, to be smart in those situations and go the other way. You know,
yeah.
What? I won't take you up on that because
yeah,
I want to go home.
But especially when I start hearing that, you know, when I hear a story, some of my best stories, police are great contacts. When an officer tells me something, I tend to really double down on believing that because they tend to be very no-nonsense, direct and trained observers,
mm-hmm.
and they have every reason not to tell you a story. So when I have an officer tell me a story, I have one whole chapter in one of the books called Ghost on the Beat, it was all just stories that the police have shared with me. Hmm. And those are fascinating to me because, again, you know, these are not exactly the most imaginative group of people that you could encounter.
But they have such vivid accounts of these situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think those are my favorite as well, especially in terms of, like, UFOs. Because I see a lot of, like documentaries and stories about, like, police and then police cam footage sometimes, but mostly, like, the accounts of, like, either policemen or, like, someone in the Air Force seeing something and they phone it in. And you can get in a lot of trouble for faking something like that. So
right.
That's definitely, in my eyes, a reputable source. But,
yeah.
But so, like I said before, like, I absolutely love your writing style. Like, your writing style keeps me reading, and then I realize it's the end of the book, and I'm like, oh, thank God, there's two more after this.
Well, now, thank you.
Now a third one.
I'm incredibly honored and flattered to hear that. After all of this, I'm still amazed that people say, I read your book. I'm like, people really read this? Well, no kidding, they really do. It's, you know, it's still a little bit shocking to me, but it is always an honor to hear that.
Honestly, it's one of the only books I ever read. I'm not the brightest crayon in the box. But anyways, so your writing style is so entertaining but informative. Do you have any writers that inspired your writing style when you first started, or do you have sort of like, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for, like a process that you go through?
Really, I have about 350 books of regional ghost stories in my office at home, and I'm a constant avid reader of this kind of stuff. And clearly, there's some styles that you resonate with and some that you don't. One of the pioneering books that really started this whole modern genre was a book called Haunted Heartland, which was the first story. First book of collected ghost stories like this to ever make the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow.
And it was written by a guy named Mike Norman and Beth Scott. And their writing style is just exactly what I wish mine to be. It was exactly the bow to the historical, and yet also very much, you could tell that they loved the stories they told.
Mm.
And that is they're always an inspiration. I can still go back and read some of those stories and say, darn, why can't I write that well, you know?
Honestly, that's the vibe I get from your stories. Like, it's not just like a journalist, like, writing his weekly tabloid, or it's not just like a fiction writer, like, writing, you know, just coming up with a story for, like, a publisher. Like, you sound genuinely, like, enthralled in all of your encounters with the people, and when you're writing, I just get a feel for it. Like, I love one of the things you say, like, armchair ghost hunters.
Yeah.
And I've just the way, especially in your foreword too, like the way you like paint that picture, like the autumn crunchiness of the leaves and just sitting there in a fire, like that's the stuff I live for.
Well, my wife will attest I'm 12 years old inside, and 12 years old happened to be about the time I fell in love with ghost stories. So yeah, I genuinely love hearing and telling ghost stories. And it's that love that is sort of drawing me back to that. To me, ghost stories are, in a weird way, they're innocent. I think they're far more innocent than most of the stuff I see on the news at 5 o'clock news.
Oh, right.
And they're romantic in the classic sense of the word, meaning, to me, they're all about the wonder and the mystery of life and what may be out there. And before I can write something, I need to be able to fall in love with it. And typically, I do a lot of my writing either very early in the morning or occasionally in the past, mid late at night. And if I can be writing and look down and all the hairs on the back of my hand are standing up, it's like, okay, I'm in the zone. You know,
this is it. This
fully
is
the, dialed in.
Yeah. yeah, but that's some of the, like, when I read like Lovecraft or like, especially Lovecraft, like it's like, it's the fear of the unknown, like the insane unknown, if you're talking about Lovecraft,
right.
But also like the beauty of it, like like these ancient creatures, or not even creatures, like just the images or the after images and like the shadows, and not knowing is extremely scary. But at the same time, like you said, like there's a beauty in that. And I think that's, that's why I love, well, Halloween in general, but also just like horror and just like the unknown shadows. And there's an appreciation.
Well, you think about it, technology, for all of its benefits, which are many, has shown this kind of harsh, incandescent light of truth on so many of our favorite myths, and those myths just evaporate, you know? And it's like we've broken open the kaleidoscope of life, and you know, now we know what makes the colors, but in it, we've lost some of that sense of wonder about the world. But ghost stories are all about the things that maybe we can't quite perceive, quite know. You can't quite, and you never will be able to prove it. But you also can't quite rule it out either. And it's in that wondering, life is still magic. And I think that's it. Ghost stories are still magic to me. They really, really are. I just turned 60 years old, and ghost story has the same magic to me that it did when I fell in love with them when I was 12.
That's amazing. Yeah, like one of my favorite quotes, I'm not sure exactly who says it, but I heard it in an Incubus song. But they said that what you can touch, smell, see, and hear is less than 1/1,000,000th of reality. And that sort of like blew my mind open a little bit, because what if like there's things all around us, but we don't have the right organ to like sense it? Yeah. So it could be right in front of us, but there's no way we can perceive it. Like, we can't touch it. We can't taste it. It's just, even like the feeling of like love or the feeling of fear, those are real things, but in the same sense, it's like a concept, but it can be real to so many people.
You're like perfectly describing From Beyond from H.P. Lovecraft, right, which is one of my favorites. Oh. They're a machine that unlocks your pineal gland's ability to see the unseeable.
Oh, like that insight? Like,
immerse yourself into the real, real world. And it's like, really scary.
That gave me goosebumps, you saying that. I was like, oh.
Well, there is something about ghost stories that is so universally appealing. This blows me away. This absolutely blows me away. But every single anthropologist will say that every single culture that we know about across the entire world from the beginning of civilization, every single culture has had some form of ghost stories in them. Wow. Now, you think about that for all of the years of civilization and all across the world, every single culture that they've studied has had some form. Now, they vary a little bit culturally and things like that, but every single one that tells you is that it is so universal. There is something about these stories that really attract us. And you say, well, what is it? Well, the easy sort of the chit chat answer is, well, it's about our own mortality. And that's a part of it. But I think there's a lot more to it than that. I think it's about wanting to believe there's more in this world than what we see and perceive. And there's more than the reality in which we live every day. And it's as simple as when I'm going to bed and there's a thump in the basement and I'm only 80% sure it's the furnace. It's that other 20%, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I love it.
The world is beautiful, and even in the unknowns and in the deepest parts of the Marianas Trench, like we still creatures from stories we're discovering, and take it the other way, space we're still discovering, and take it in Gary, Indiana, they had that huge like demonic ghost thing with the house, and like it's still happening. Like the unknown is being filled in, but then more unknown is popping up. But.
Well, Shakespeare said there's more in this world than is accounted for in your philosophy, Horatio.
There you go.
Know.
But anyways, Jenny, did you have any other questions for Mark? I don't want to, like I said, fangirl too much.
No, I'm good. I didn't have any other questions.
All right, perfect. Well, another part of this, I wanted to definitely highlight not only Halloween and the spookiness in general, but October 24th, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And from what I've seen on the website too, there's like a week long.
Yes. Thing. So the HPL Fan Fest. This is our second year doing it. This is the first year all virtual, but we're going with it. So we're celebrating it all week long because it's virtual, so we can do that. We start off on Monday, the 19th. We're doing a Japanese folklore and mythology.
I seen that.
Yeah.
And I seen the mentioning of like the yokai, which is demons, I believe, or the ghost.
It's like a demon ghost, yokai oni that's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, along those lines.
But
I don't know exactly which one it is. But.
Oh, but yeah. That what was I gonna say? Oh, are you doing that panel or is it?
No. We actually have a person, Laura, and I'm gonna mess up her last name because it's like Vanderdonkeyfer. And she knows that. So.
That sounded right.
Yeah, it sounded right. She actually did that for Gen Con from Indianapolis.
Oh.
And she just recorded it for us, so we're showing that one. She's also on our panel for writers and publishing later in the week. We also have Jay Bonsinga. He does the actual novels for The Walking Dead, not the comic book. But the novels that go along with the story.
Oh, right, right.
So he's doing a Secrets from The Walking Dead. We also have a little cosplay going on. We have a cosplay competition. You can submit your cosplays to us via our email, hplfanfest@gmail.com.
So, Mark, I have to ask you, as a little segue, too, do you attend any conventions, like comic book conventions, nerd conventions?
Have I or am I?
I guess both, yeah.
Well, right now, I'm doing libraries, actually. I have a number of libraries yet this month. I do a number of libraries. I have done a couple author festivals, and actually, fairly early on, I was a speaker and a panelist at in St. Louis to a national convention of the American Ghost Research Association, which was kind of fun. It was Fan Fest for spook fans, so it was a lot of fun.
That's I actually just came from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan for vacation, and Sault Ste. Marie, which is like this little port town. I didn't know that they have an annual like Ghost Hunters Fest up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever heard of that up there?
I have not.
Yeah, I honestly haven't even heard of Sault Ste. Marie until I
until I was there.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's definitely something I'm going to look into. But anyways, I know with, like, the pandemic and everything, like, Region Nerd Alert has been really hurting. We had so many conventions planned that had to get canceled. We had so many plans to do video and so many plans that not necessarily got crossed out but pushed back because conventions will come back. And I see these virtual conventions, and it gives me so much hope that they're still out there. Like, there's still nerds who love anime, who love, like, horror movies, who love comic books. And I just thank you, Hammond Public Library, and Jenny, for putting this on for us.
Sounds great.
Yeah, we knew early in June that we needed to do it virtually. We actually have over 40 vendors that are in our little showcase on our website.
Mm.
So we had a lot of returns from last year that were willing to do it virtually for us, as well as new ones that we got.
So I guess one of my questions was, how do you like start something like this? Like, we've had Brian Grabinski on the show before of Northwest Indiana Comic Con, which I think was like the only comic convention like we went to this year.
I think we went to C2E2.
Oh, did that still happen?
Yeah,
It did right before the pandemic.
It was right before.
C2E2. Yeah, so we went to there, and then this year has been flying by, but anyway, like, how does something like that start? Like, how? Like, I know Zoom, and also I'm pretty ignorant. I've only used Zoom once, and it was off my phone, and I barely used it. I got yelled at by my boss. It was Like, oh, weren't you in the call? You had to do your face. I'm like, my camera's broke. I didn't know this was his camera with Zoom. But anyway, so yeah, how do you like what are some of the steps going like taking place to put on a virtual convention?
So we thought of different ways that we could do it. Either have it where our vendors or and panelists would get on our like Facebook and use it that way. Or get on our YouTube and did it that way. But then we discovered that we could actually stream to those services through Zoom. So I've learned a lot about Zoom. Trust me. Like, we used it, like, when we first shut down in March. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are these buttons for? Like, what's this? What's a breakout? I don't understand. So we decided that we were invite our panelists into our Zoom, and then we stream it to YouTube, and then we also have it posted to our Facebook. So we went through different ways of, should we just do Facebook? Should we just do YouTube? Because not everyone has a Facebook account, but you could also just do it on YouTube without having an account, so you can watch it. So we went through of what staff members know how to use Zoom, how who can actually be the, like, monitor for each of our panels, and we scheduled it out. I mean, we've been scheduling it since June, so it's been a fun ride trying to figure out, like, who goes where, what time.
Right, right.
How long do we have in between?
So at, like, conventions, you have different panel rooms where, like, different things are going on. So is this, like, basically one main panel, like, virtual floor? And where all the events happen, or will there be, like, different links to different rooms?
So there's different links to each panel. We're using our own Zoom account, but our panelists and anyone that wants to participate in the panel, like ask questions to our panelists, can access the Zoom. And then we stream that to YouTube, where you could also ask questions, but not in person. But we have each link separate just so that we kind of saw that off of other bigger Comic-Cons that were doing it virtually this year. We noticed that they were doing separate ones so that you could watch what you want instead of watching the entire thing.
Okay. So there is, I guess, flexibility for someone to choose. I was going to ask this. So if you can, like, if I had no idea, like, what a I have some knowledge of a convention, but I wanted to participate or attend the virtual convention, what would, like, basically my day look like attending this convention virtually?
What we would suggest you do is go to the website, the hammond.lib.in.us/fanfest.html. And go there and see what we have on our schedule. You can also watch it straight from the website. So we have those YouTube streaming into those. You just click play on the image and it plays whatever's streaming at that time. We have the times on there. You could also watch our Facebook. We will be posting each panel on there and you can watch it from there if you prefer to do that.
Oh, wow. And you said there's going to be virtual vendors as well. So how do the vendors work? Because I see a lot of my favorite, like some of my favorite artists, I think Tea and Jelly Beans are there. The Abbott leather-bound bookmaking.
Yeah, with the eyes, yep.
Yeah, and so do you just put like their links or are they having like a showcase of items? Or?
They just have a link. We also ask them to do a little short video for us. We also added recently added a panel that's Get to Know Your Vendor, which starts off at 10 a.m. On October 24th, that Saturday. So we invited all the vendors to come in. You got like 2 to 3 minutes to showcase your products or organization or whatever you're doing so that it kind of seems like if you're at a convention, you step up to someone's booth and they tell you what they've got. That's kind of how it's working, yeah.
That's cool that you have that, like, interaction still of, you know, perusing around, you know, if I want to buy something. But honestly, it sounds a little bit easier because then you can just, you know, sitting.
And your PJs.
Yeah, and your PJs and yeah. Shopping.
Yeah, like Amazon, except a convention.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. Actually, that sounds like a good idea, like an Amazon convention. Yeah. Whoever's listening.
Hear that, Bezos? Yeah.
Hear that, Bezos? Oh, Jeff Bezos, man. I don't know what took me there. But so you said that there's a cosplay contest. So mm-hmm. I don't know if you're able to tell us a little bit about it, but is there going to be like prizes?
Yeah. So what's happening is you send us your little photo of you in cosplay, and we will post it to our Facebook event. The more likes, whoever has the top three likes gets a prize.
Oh, wow. So are there any rules like no post-production or just send us the greatest photo you've ever...
Yeah, just send the greatest photos you ever had.
Ever had.
Or your Halloween costume from last year. I don't care.
Whatever gets the most...
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's amazing. So you want to tell us the dates again? Like, or you said it's a week-long event?
So it's week-long. So it begins Monday on October 19th. The demonstration is at 6 p.m., and then it goes Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all the way up into our Saturday, which is our big day, where we have panels for podcasting, panels for cosplay. We have a Dungeons & Dragons panel.
Hmm. I've seen a Call of Cthulhu game as well.
Yeah, we have a Call of Cthulhu game going on. You do have to register for that, and the link's on the website for it.
Oh, wow. So that sounds like so much interactivity from the comfort of your own home.
Yeah, we wanted to try to make it as interactive as possible. That's why we have seven panels. We have three craft demonstrations. We have two drawing demonstrations. We have someone reading from their books.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you for coming on the show and also bringing this virtual convention to my life so I can have
Yeah, I'm
going to
be there Monday for that Japanese folklore.
I will be all over that as well because I need a taste of a convention because it's been so long. But we have a little bit more time here. I was going to see maybe we can give maybe like one or two book suggestions. And I know, Jenny, you said you've brought a couple books.
Yeah, I did, actually. Mark, I actually brought The Haunted Indiana 1 and 2 with me. The library also has the 3 and 4. They're just checked out.
Well, thank you.
They often get checked out during this time of year. I also brought, I don't know if anyone's read Hoosier Folk Legends by Ronald Baker.
Yeah. Yes, that's a classic.
Yeah, it is a classic. Oh. My aunt and I read this together. We loved it. Hmm. I also found Spooky Indiana, Tales of Haunting, Strange Happenings, and Other Local Lore, retold by S.E. Scholzer. I think that's how you pronounce the name.
Hmm.
Okay.
Wow. That first one had an interesting cover.
This one?
Yeah. What? You mind if I take quick look at it?
Very trash polka style with just the red and blacks.
Yeah, I love that.
That's actually my own copy, but the library is too. Don't worry. And I also brought a few of just ones that are not focused about Indiana, but ghost. So we have one that has classic tales of horror and suspense called Ghost Stories. It's edited by Lisa Morton and Leslie Killinger. And then one that recently came out in 2016 called Ghostland, An American History in Haunted Places, Colin Dickey.
Hmm.
And we have bunches of ghost story books. You know, we have the classics from Edgar Allan Poe and Charles Dickens, too. Hmm. And we also have it online. So if you don't want to come in the library to get actual physical books, and we understand during the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
We have two databases. One's called Hoopla, and the other one is called Overdrive. And they have bunches of ghost stories, haunted. I think they have Haunted Indiana on there, too.
Hmm. Wow, yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I definitely, when I read a book, I prefer like having the physical in my hand.
I gotta turn a page. Yeah,
I have to like turn.
Yeah, me too.
Like I have to have that page turn, and I think I will be going to my local public library to get some horror stories because it is the season. So Mark, or actually Skylar, we'll go to you.
Oh man.
So do you have some recommendations?
Man, I feel like I'm prepared because you had all these Indiana stories and like actual ghost stories, and I'm just like, oh, cosmic horror. I really, really enjoyed Demiurge by Michael Shea, which is just a collection of stories.
You lent it to me. I can attest it is very spooky.
It's so good. And I just love the way that Shea writes. And then I just recently finished The Imago Sequence by Laird Barron. And that's also very mind-breaky type horror. The Shining's a really good one as well. And then on my up-and-coming reads, one that I really want to read that I think I'm going to do this year, I need to find a copy of it, is The Elementals by Michael McDowell. I've heard that was a pretty decent horror tale, so I just need to get my hands on it now.
Nice, nice. Maybe go to the library. They might have it. Yep.
I'm going
to
try that.
And Mark, do you have any book recommendations? I do have to say... Other than Haunted in Indiana.
Which is not to say I would even recommend mine. But, you know, I mean, to me, like I say, the one that got it started really was Haunted Heartland by Mike Norman and Beth Scott. And then they wrote a sort of sequel called Historic Haunted America. Mm. And just the style that they have is just absolutely incredible. And the other one that... Two actually that came out of Chicago. Ursula Bielski has Chicagoland Haunts 1 and 2. And Ursula is one of those people that I just read and I just think, wow, if I could just write this well. She really hits it well. Mm. And especially the first one is just a classic. It'll keep you up at night. It really, really will. And then, you know, if you want to go in for fiction, yes, I do like Stephen King, especially some of the old Salem's Lot will absolutely keep me up. I agree with you, The Shining. And even going back beyond that, you know, you mentioned Charles Dickens. Rudyard Kipling had a number of great ghost stories. There's collections there. So any of those would certainly serve to keep you up at night.
And you heard it from the spooky man himself, Mark Merriman.
I've been called worse.
And I guess my little recommendation from someone who wishes he was a more avid book reader like he was a few years ago and not so much into video games, but there's a Japanese horror, Junji Ito. And he's a manga artist, so there's a lot of very graphic, I wouldn't say it's more of like the mythos, like the cosmic horror a little bit to some of his stories, but there's also like a realism to it and a very surrealism to it. And I recommend Uzumaki. I've reread that recently, and it's basically like an anthology of this town. And Uzumaki, I believe, means spiral in Japanese.
Mm, yeah.
And it's just each story incorporates some sort of spiral. Like there's one where, this kid gets sick and he comes back to school and he literally turns into like this grotesque snail. And the town, like apartment complexes just turning into spirals and people distorting and a lot of body horror in it as well. But Junji Ito, I definitely... recommend some of his manga works, and there are pictures, so but with that, Mark, thank you so much for...
Thank you for having me on, and I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be on with all of you folks, so thank you so much.
Thank you. This was my favorite podcast, I have to say it.
Sorry, I was so nervous for this.
I was also nervous, and thank you so much, Mark, I don't know if I properly thanked you, but you also signed my book a long time ago, and you said happy hauntings, and you told me happy birthday in person, because Halloween is my birthday.
Well, so. Happy birthday, then. Happy early birthday.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And thank you all. Take care, folks. Thank you so much.